Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ryan, and I will be your conference operator for today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the second quarter 2018 financial results conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star and then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. I would like to turn the call over now to Mr. John McCann. Sir, you may now begin.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you for joining the call today. Please visit corp.mace.com, investor relations, transcripts, and presentations, as we have loaded our chairman's letter and our PowerPoint detailing the second quarter investor call. Now I'll read to you a forward-looking statement and go through the 6 months ending June 30th, 2018. Certain statements and information during this conference call will be constitute forward-looking statements and are based on management's expectation and information currently in the possession of management. When used during the conference call, the words or phrases will likely result or expected to, will continue, is anticipated, estimated, projected, and intended to, or similar expressions are intended to identify forward-looking statements. Such statements are subjected to certain risks, known and unknown, uncertainties including but not limited to economic conditions, limit of capital resources, and the ability of management to effectively manage the business and integrate acquired businesses. Such factors could materially adversely affect Mace's financial performance. It could cause Mace's actual results for future periods to differ materially from the opinions or statements expressed during this call. So thanks. And once again, if you can, visit corp.mace.com, investor relations, transcripts, and presentations. You'll see a PowerPoint. I'm not going to walk through the PowerPoint, but we can answer questions at the end of my brief commentary on the quarter. So once again, we will do a Q&A. The chairman's letter is on our website, and additionally, the PowerPoint presentation I had mentioned. So just a quick recap. Sales revenues increased 13.3% in the quarter as major customers experienced strong POS sales in the quarter, and we grew our distribution by adding 17 accounts with multiple locations and doors. One major account has had robust POS, which is POS. POS sales are point of sales at the register, which has led to replenishment orders and off-shelf placements to keep up with the demand. Our current e-commerce strategy has been effective, and we're experiencing double-digit growth in the category. David Happy has done a great job building out a team to support the category and enhance our brand, our messaging, and develop a strategic advertising plan to support the category. Note in the first quarter, we overspent in the category, which led to negative EBITDA, as we tested several ideas and concepts. This was corrected in March and is now in line with our expectations. We have opened new categories to sell our products, and we will continue to develop ways to engage our customers and consumers directly. We also had some nice pipeline fills in the quarter with a major retailer that led to our 13.3% increase. On the marketing side, we launched a new website in late June with some limited success, and we're anticipating making more enhancements to the site as a critical element of our long-term branding strategy. Just a couple notes on the web. Unique visitors are up 50% year-over-year. Page views are up 192% year-over-year. Page view sessions, meaning how long a person stayed on our page, is up 89%, and our bounce rate is down 76% year-over-year. As stated in the chairman's letter, we are working on interviewing and reviewing marketing companies to take advantage of our world-renowned brand name and excellent products. We expect to hire an agency in the next 60 and 90 days to further enhance our digital e-commerce strategy, along with our marketing strategy overall. A couple of disappointments to note. Less Lethal Tactical has been a disappointment thus far as production has been delayed, but now we're back on track as we should have all inventories in-house by September. We have fulfilled some small orders in the past quarter, mostly of 12-gauge products going to a couple different departments, but we have higher expectations for the category. We have a robust training schedule for the next couple months, which will expose our brand to large and small departments and agencies in the U.S. and international. LE, our law enforcement or tactical, has been down year over year for a couple reasons. We've seen department usage has been down, class trainings have been down. So in order to combat that, we are reversing the trend by increasing our OC trainings and classes to our different departments across the United States and working with several agencies across the U.S. to garner more business. Internationally, we've had a timing issue with some of our sales. There's been an adjustment to the marketplace as the slowdown in Europe has continued over the past several quarters. We have seen an increase in orders and sales in the third quarter, so we're getting closer to our goal, but we still have some work to do in the channel, but we're still optimistic. I do want to note, India is on our radar. We're working on a profitable solution for the market. The announcement made in India was premature, but stay tuned for more information in the near-term future. Another slight disappointment for the company in the quarter that was made up by other channels is our sporting goods channel. The channel is down due to less stores. Sports Authority has closed. A couple other key accounts have closed. We have reorganized and reduced our cost in the channel, so our cost to service the channel has been greatly reduced and will be in the going forward. We are seeing a positive trend in the channel in that smaller formats, smaller footprints, our two-step distributors are experiencing some increases, and we think we're well positioned in the channel to compete, but we do expect the channel not to grow as robustly as some other channels that we do business with. Gross profit, just to comment on, we had a 20% increase in the quarter due to a strong mix of sales and products and customers. During the period, we also have fully amortized tooling expense on our unique flip-top product, so we expect to see continued strong margins year over year as the tooling expenses dropped off as we buy more handles. It's our tooling, so it was a great benefit for the company. We took some costs out in the past. We have some planned cost reductions on our materials as we go into the future. We're continuing to work on product improvements, both on our current products and some of our newer products that we're working on. We have additionally started our SKU reduction as we do on an annualized basis, and we continue to reduce our SKUs to focus on the SKUs that are most profitable and the most successful at retail. Major channels like consumer and e-commerce help drive the growth, and we do anticipating maintaining this momentum for the first half to the back half of the year. Then lastly, on EBITDA, in the quarter we achieved a run rate of 10% through operational efficiency, reducing waste and duplication of roles and duties. We expect to continue to review our allocation of resources so we optimize our efforts and increase our long-term sustainable double-digit EBITDA. We've had some additional expenses in the quarter, which we laid out in our PowerPoint presentation, namely legal, advertising, time in a trade show, some personnel and consulting. We expect the June run rate will achieve the same run rate into July, and this is just our minimal goal. Couple comments on inventory and overall, and then we can turn it over for questions. Inventory, our current days on hand is 129, which is a 33% improvement from year end. We have some large orders in-house that we'll fulfill in the third quarter, so we are tracking well to what our inventory expectations are and how quickly we're turning our inventory. We do not have any impaired inventory. We've been able to move all the inventory that we need to, and inventory between raw materials and finished goods is tracking to what we expect. Lastly, just noting on inventory, we are not seeing any issues out of Asia thus far. We are tracking it. David Happy is tracking, especially with some of our personal arms and some of our other captured factories that we have in Asia, and we're doing a good job of making sure that if there's any duties or any issues that we have to worry about, that we have backup solutions and plans. And then really just overall, acquisitions have helped the company beyond revenue gains. As we've increased our operational efficiency, there's more to come in the future. The acquisitions were made to align the company for future growth as consumer buying patterns continue to change, and we're in a position now to service our customers due to their changing habits of where they purchase, how they purchase, and when they purchase. Sales pipeline and future orders are strong, so we expect to continue to see double-digit growth on our revenue line in the future. Margins will continue to be strong as we made good decisions in the past on products, productions, and parts. And we're continuing to see improved EBITDA results as we align our internal and external sources to be more customer-centric and customer-facing. So those are really the brief comments. We can turn it over now, Ryan, to questions. We do want to limit the questions to one per person with a couple of follow-up questions so everybody has an opportunity to speak. in the room with me, and you can address the questions to the person that you want. Carl Smith, our CFO, is here. Our executive chairman of the board, Chuck Garish, is here. And then also our vice chairman of the board, executive vice chairman of the board, Sanjay Singh, is here. So with that, Ryan, we'll turn it over to you for questions.
Thank you, sir. At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order for you to ask questions, please press star and then the number one on your telephone keypad. We will pause for just a moment to compile a Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Mr. Thurman Willis, a private investor. Sir, your line is open.
Thank you, John. Thank you for taking my call. Gentlemen, I had a chance to attend the annual meeting, which I thought was excellent. I was glad to hear a new tone. And Chuck, in your letter of talking about promoting, and marketing our company, I salute you for that. And I would also like to say that I appreciate the fact that you are having this call. I think that's very important. So with that, I'll get to my questions. In marketing and branding, we talked about doing some activity there. And could you expand a little bit on the marketing and branding? And does that mean that we may possibly purchase an IR firm, that we may hire an IR firm to help us with our marketing and education? And then I do have one follow-up.
Sure. So when we speak of marketing and branding, let's put it into two buckets. One of them is to the markets, the would-be investors, and the other one's to the general consumers. We feel at this point, and it's the evolution of the brand, that it's a good time for the company to look at true PR, branding, marketing companies to raise us above the clutter of the advertising world as it is today. The advertising world is very fragmented. Most kids watch things on their devices. They don't watch traditional television. So getting that Mace brand out in front of the people we need to is a critical element of our next steps of what we need to do. The other big portion of it, Thurman, is that buying habits have changed dramatically, right? So if you look at the fourth quarter of last year, Amazon accounted for almost 25% of all purchases. That trend is going to continue. So what we're looking at is how do we address that digital media? How do we address making sure consumers know our products are available? Because a couple things that we know is when they see our products, they buy our products. When they buy our products, they like our products. And they also trust the brand. So we're looking at interviewing and talking to branding and marketing companies as we speak. Then I think the elevation of the next steps after that will be looking at IR firms, looking at translating that message that we brought to consumers into investors so they understand what we're doing. We would really like to see a couple more months of 10% or above EBITDA and double-digit top-line growth, because I think that's the best thing that will help investors understand it. And then lastly, investors are like everybody else in the world. If they see us all over the place, they're going to be attracted to our brand, which then would make an IR company's job a lot easier, because they would walk into XYZ retailer, they'd go online, they'd see us, and they'd see a consistent branding message that we are the product that will protect you. We are the product that you should have with you at all times.
Thank you, and let me go to my follow-up. The follow-up is on enhancing shareholder value. I think all of us that have been shareholders for a long term have watched our stock languish at this 33 to 35 cent level. I was glad to see that more emphasis is going to be placed on this. I have given some 3 to 4 suggestions, which includes a buyback program authorizing stock repurchase when our stock falls to these lower levels. So in enhancing shareholder value, I'd like to address this to Sanjay and Chuck and ask that now that you're in pocket for about 4 months, you own 20% of the company, what basically do you plan to do to get rid of this seemingly overhang that's been in our stock I think we all agree that at some 33, 34 cents, it is undervalued, especially with a dollar a share in NOLs. And could you speak specifically to plans of execution to enhance shareholder value as it relates to potential buybacks or getting rid of overhang, et cetera? If you could be very explicit about answering that, and that question goes to Sanjay or Chuck or both.
Thurman, so the share buyback program that you have you mentioned at the annual meeting is on the board's radar. It'll be a topic of discussion the next time we meet. In terms of the overhang, if the buying opportunity is right, yes, we will look into it and execute on it. It needs to make sense to us. In terms of enhancing shareholder value, you've seen a short-term uptick in EBITDA, and you're going to continue to see that as we move forward. The company is taking actions to increase the enterprise value of the company.
So thanks, Ryan. We can go to the next. So Thurman, we'll give a couple other people a chance to speak now, but thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Mr. Vijay Marulia of Regal Point Capital. Your line is open.
Congrats on the quarter, guys.
Thank you, Vijay.
Thank you for doing the call. I agree with Thurman and Andrew and the rest of the shareholders that these calls do help. So the quick and dirty math looks like if the one-time expenses are really one-time, we're going to be building cash flow pretty aggressively moving forward, especially looking at your guidance for the third quarter. Is there something that I'm missing there, or is that how you guys see it as well?
Oh, no, we see it the same way. We think there's a lot of opportunity for upside. We're seeing a top-line revenue growth, and now we're making sure that we have no leakage, making sure that growth is sustainable, which we feel it is based on what we're doing. We think we're looking at some expenses as we move forward in marketing to further enhance that long-term value of the brand, but we definitely think that double-digit EBITDA is it within our grasp, and like I said earlier, 10% we think it's just a minimum.
Okay. Also, the website looks fantastic. Great improvements there. So I'm assuming if there's one-time expenses in the third quarter, it would probably be more related to marketing than legal, right?
Correct.
And do you can you kind of give me some color on the amount you want to spend? Could we make it kind of performance-based like we talked about?
Well, so a lot of what we're looking at, interviewing marketing companies is a performance-based plan because we think we have a great product, and as that great product gets out in front of more eyeballs, we do see more sales. We are pleased with, the initial launch of the website. I think there's some more work that we can do to enhance it and focus down that message even a little bit further. Even with this website, a portion of the work was done on a success basis on conversions and page views and et cetera, so we're tracking a lot of that. And then the other part of the website that I think will help enhance us in the future that won't be an expense in the future is we changed our back office for the website, so we went from one platform to another. The newer platform allows for greater conversion, easier shopping, easier cart and basket, if you would, and easier checkout, which is like one of the critical elements to any website that you see a product, you want to put it in your cart, you want to be able to purchase it very easily. And that was one of the, one of the expenses in the quarter. The other one, like David Happy has an aggressive plan on our e-commerce strategy to make sure the right messaging, the right video content, the right message to our consumers are out there. Because we do have a different message based on the product, whether it's a pink jogging product or it's a black jogging product, whether it's a stun gun that we've seen some success in, we really want to keep that business going.
No, I totally agree. And David Happy's plan makes me happy. So congrats, guys. I'll back out.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Mr. Andrew Shapiro of Lawndale Capital. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having the call. I'd first like to direct my questions to Sanjay and Chuck, so some of the big picture here. I appreciate it. It will be another 60 to 90 days before you complete development of your long-term strategic plan, as your letter says. But at this interim point, can you at least provide some insight as to what products and or segments or channels you have identified for greater or lesser resource allocations?
The channels that are being reviewed by us are the law enforcement and specifically the less than lethal munitions play. As you know, that's been in play for the last 6 months. There have been several delays that John talked about. So that's under review. We're either going to be in that business or not, and that'll be figured out in the next 60 days.
There's even a chance we would not be in that business? What is the cause of the delay this time? Before, you didn't have someone who had the ability to store or manufacture. What's causing the delay in terms of partnership at present?
Raw material delays from our supplier.
Correct.
It's caused the plans to extend out about 90 days.
Okay. And when your letter said you're now averaging a run rate of 10% adjusted EBITDA in the last 90 days, were you guys referring to 90 days ended July or ended June? And more importantly for you, Chuck and or Sanjay, is over the next 3 years, what do you see as a realistic EBITDA margin target for the re-energized Mace that you two envision?
The first point is that the EBITDA has been averaging about 10% in the last 90 days, counting July and backwards.
Okay.
So July, June, and May. April was not a good month. Looking forward, look, it's we have an internal target, but until we sort of figure out the execution plans, let's put it this way. The team is committed to 20%+ EBITDA is what we're shooting for. Whether we will achieve it in the next 3 years or 12 months remains to be seen. But there are plans and actions and attitudes and behaviors in line to achieve that.
Right. Well, that's why I asked. I gave you 3 years in the question. I have other questions, but I'll back out in case someone else is in the queue. But please come back.
Thanks.
Again, if you would like to ask your question, please press star and then the number one on your telephone keypad. We have a follow-up question from Mr. Andrew Shapiro of Lauderdale Capital. Your line is open.
Thanks. Chuck and Sanjay, can you guys discuss your international sales and what you guys see is working and what you see is not working? And is this an issue of seasonality or regulatory burdens that have not yet cleared up in the international marketplace?
So we see a couple of things going on in the international marketplace. There is a fair amount of activity coming from whether it's South America or Europe, Belgium, and even in Asia, Taiwan, Taipei, or the Middle East, we get a lot of inquiries. There are some issues around labeling that John can get into more detail in Europe, where there's some regulatory approval that is required by the government in Germany and I believe in Belgium. Our international presence is, the brand is well known. We get a lot of inquiries. It's directly proportional to the conflicts that you hear about in the news. And that's when we see inquiries sort of pop up. It's not a significant play at the moment for us. John, you want to expand?
So, yeah, I can expand a little bit, Andrew. So if you look at it in buckets, most of Western Europe, what Sanjay had referred to, has gone through some changes with labeling and requirements, which has slowed down the usage and also the distribution of the product. So, but we're seeing some light at the end of the tunnel there. Some of our big customers in the past are finally now figuring out what they need to do so they can purchase. Then you look at other buckets, South America, which Sanjay had mentioned, we're seeing some nice growth. We've had some nice pickup in some different markets in those areas. And then also Canada, we've seen some nice pickup with the acquisitions that we're seeing distribution on our bear spray up in Canada. And then lastly, we've had some success down in Mexico. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag. We do think that longer term that, A, the brand has universal appeal. B, there's market segments that we can service a little bit better and a little bit more proactively. And then C, we're responding to bids now for police forces worldwide that we hadn't been in the past. So give you an example, we've just landed Chile, the prison systems that we'll be distributing some products to over the next couple weeks, and hopefully that'll be a longer-term contract. So that last segment could be a nice win for us, that if we, on an international basis, if we can get some more OC, as we call it, pepper spray out into different departments and police forces worldwide.
Okay. Chuck and Sanjay, you know, a lot of these questions for you guys. You're the new lead investors here, and your vision and energy as to where you're taking this and what you see as assets or untapped opportunity are what's important to me here to understand as a long-term investor in the future. So with little seen from Select Security, SecureCheck, and other license deals that were cut before you guys were here, what are your views regarding monetization and licensing of the Mace brand? This seems like a huge high-margin opportunity that has not been realized over many, many years.
Do you understand? Okay.
Yeah, our we haven't looked at licensing opportunities, Andrew, specifically because of the fact that we feel that the brand is under-leveraged in our minds. The addressable market for the brand is much larger without having to go down a licensing route. You know, our intent is simple, to make the lives of our customers safer and more secure. And I think we've just started that journey in earnest in terms of a strategic view of the business, looking at the thesis that way.
Okay. But as you're considering, for example, potentially leaving the law enforcement market or other markets, it would seem that someone who is in those markets and who can do well but using the Mace brand would provide our company 100% margin royalty streams to be used against our NOL and monetize our brand in areas that you guys may choose that, you know, we're not going to be all things to all people here.
That is a possibility, but just to clarify, we're not saying we're getting out of the law enforcement business. It's under review.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, just like any you know, and it's more specifically the LLM. It's simply under review. And we're not ruling out any licensing opportunities. In fact, we are considering one at the moment. You know, whatever makes economic sense. It is not something that is our exclusively our single most important priority at the moment. There are several other priorities.
Okay. Could you, maybe I didn't, so what are those priorities? Let's just get a feel for where you guys are focusing on.
Attacking the domestic market, going to having a strategy that gets our products in every household.
And in addressing that, I guess I have a question here regarding, I guess, a few of the vertical markets. The company launched a safety kit for schools, homes, and businesses that includes a pepper gel product that can be effective from 25 to 30 feet, which is a great distance. We also saw media reports of an Ohio school district installing a pepper spray base system for fending off or mitigating loss of life in active shooter situations, something that should be an attractive kind of system for all school districts all over the country. Can you talk some more about your products and this other system and what inroads pepper spray and in particular mace is making to address this large and sizable market need?
Right. So, Andrew, we're aware, and we can't really comment on one of the products that you had mentioned. We're very aware of it. We are doing some work with it. So, that being said, the other segment of it, yes, David's group, our e-commerce group, and our direct marketing group is working with different individual schools on the benefits of our products. That's why you saw that safety kit. We're still promoting that safety kit on Amazon. In the near-term future, you'll see a couple other kits come to market that we think also address some of these needs. And as Sanjay said, we're looking at all opportunities within the domestic market to grow the business and even in the international market, and schools are a big segment of it. But we have a lot of partnerships that we prefer not to address at this time.
Okay. At the annual meeting, management discussed some notable accomplishments in marketing and starting to seed sales of the Mace Alert 911 product, and I think it was with respect to one of the home shopping networks. What were the revenue levels of Alert 911 in Q2 versus the prior year? Have they become meaningful yet? Because it seems to be a product that would have a large opportunity set here.
Right. So they're not meaningful to the organization. What's meaningful to the organization is that we're sourcing some products that go along with the Mace 911 that you'll see on some electronic shopping channels, and you'll see some distribution out in the general public that fits into what we wanted to do, and you'll see that in the future revenue streams as we move forward. We've had some success in electronic shopping through a partnership again.
Okay. And Chuck and Sanjay, is Alert 911 a product line that you envision to get more focus and resource allocation going forward, or it's something that will be more your joint venture partner's obligation and focus and not Mace's concern as much?
Ask you to take that.
Okay.
Right now, we're looking at everything, Andrew, so I'd say it falls into a bucket of under review to make sure that it's the right product and it fits with what we want to do. One of the things that, like, when you have some outsiders come in and you re-look at your house, you say, hey, I should have focused a little bit more on this area and that area. And I think one of the things that I'd agree with, too, that with Sanjay and Chuck, that we have a lot of opportunity just in OC and pepper spray to get a bigger share of market. And I think that's a major focus. And then we look at what other things can go along with that focus. But just even when I came in, we focused on pepper. Maybe we took our eye off the ball a little bit because we fell in love with the shiny toys in the corners and whatnot. But now somebody coming in saying, wait, you make the best product in the world. Don't worry about the other crap. Let's get this done. And I think that's the message been. And I've been to the management team, and the management team is fully supportive of it. I think as we look forward, we'll look and see how this fits into that strategy and make sure that that's the best strategy. You will see some things bucketed around Mace 911 in the near-term future along with the kits idea, because we also think that's a great way to raise our ASP. But right now it's under review, I would say, as a recap, but like OC and Pepper, we still have a lot of opportunities in that segment.
Okay, I have other questions, but I've asked enough here. I'll back out. Please come back to me if there's time.
Sure.
Your next question comes from the line of Sir William Rankin, a private investor. Your line is open.
Hey, thanks, John, for taking the call. It's been a long time coming, but really pleased to see the positive board changes. And again, congrats on the quarterly results. It's very positive, and looks like you've got your plans well underway. On the growth side, you expect, I think, significant growth, and that's what's got, hopefully more investors will be coming along and get excited about. Do you think you're going to need to raise any capital to fund that growth? And if so, is that going to be debt or equity?
Currently, we're not looking at any capital raises. We're feeling pretty good about we can fund the growth with our own resources.
Okay. And as far as your production plans, do you expect to take on production setting up internal operations or outsourcing most of your production?
We are not looking at outsourcing our production. What we are doing is looking at that from order to production to see what efficiencies we can drag out of that. And then also, like, I think a big, big point is that allocation of resources to be more customer-centric, more forward-facing to our customers so we attract more customers into it. We think there's some efficiencies we still can build out by ourselves, but we are always open to looking at what's the best way to go to market.
Okay, and just on that, related to that, as far as your employment base, how many employees do you currently have?
We have less than 50 FTEs.
All right. All right, that's my one follow-up. I'll jump back in the queue. Thanks.
Thanks, Bill.
Your next question comes from the line of Mr. Vijay Marulia of Regal Point Capital. Your line is open.
John, I saw the article about Mace India, and we're all very excited about that. Of course, I don't need to repeat the demographic story. And Jay, our partner there, had some very aggressive expectations. And although the expectations are very doable in terms of math, you know, it would require in the next 6 months a lot of action. So are we planning on going to India and opening up a facility in the next 6 months? And if not, then why not and when?
Okay, so excellent question. So once again, I want to preface, because we do have a great partner in India. He jumped the gun. He was misquoted by the Indian papers. That's why we didn't see anything in the United States, just to get that out there. Second thing is we're working on a phased approach, as we have been with our Indian partner. A, finding the right partner. B, we're working with the former ambassador to India to make sure that operationally we can do what we want. Third level that we're still at today is really making sure what the market needs, right? So in rupees, the Indian currency, making sure that we hit what's affordable, what hits the right market segments, and we can hit the right consumers. And the last thing is working on production, because right now one of the drawbacks of doing business in India, it's an over 35% duty just to ship product into India, so it's not sustainable to continue to ship product out of the United States. What we have done in the first half of this year that's in that marketing spend, sent product over to seed the field to make sure that we had the findings that would indicate that, yes, it's right for the market. There's three things now that need to happen is we have to solidify a plan. We actually have to solidify the partnership. And then the third thing is we have to solidify that go-to-market strategy to make sure that we're priced properly for the market and we're promoting properly for the market. So the short-term plans is not to go to India today, but that could change if we can get everything lined up the way we think we can do, and then also, like in the United States, be the dominant player, the premium player in the market.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Go soon, brother.
Your next question comes from the line of Mrs. Thurman Willis, a private investor. Sir, your line is open.
Yes, a quick follow-up. Chuck, I thought the chairman's letter was very clear, precise, and I think it's what we all wanted to see. The prior board thought once the company became profitable that our stock price would improve. We've talked about a 10 to 20% increase in revenues. We've seen a nice quarter, as people have commented on. And yet, with the great news of yesterday, as usual, the stock goes down in price. Can you speak a little more specifically of steps to enhance liquidity and to improve the stock price as revenues are increasing and you're projecting a 10 to 20% growth rate going forward, but yet we still languish? What specifically, one, two, or three things are you focusing on that's going to improve liquidity and improve stock price? That's for Sanjay.
We are in the process of interviewing IR firms. We talked to one that wasn't a good fit. We have recommendations from others, and we're in the process of interviewing them. That's one step that we're looking at executing. In terms of the overhang, as I mentioned a few minutes back, you know, we'll look at what makes sense now that the earnings are out, and see if Chuck and I want to execute on that. On that particular topic, Thurman, that's all I can offer at the moment. You know, we're not happy that the stock price is down after the earnings came out, and I think a lot of us understand the reasons why. So that is top of mind. But that's all I can share at the moment.
Right.
Thank you for taking my question. And again, it was an excellent quarter and an excellent letter to talk about our plan and strategy. So we as investors, thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Thurman. Okay, Ryan, are we in? If there's a couple more questions, otherwise we can wrap up a little bit early.
We have one last question from Mr. Andrew Shapiro from Lawndale Capital. Your line is open.
Hi. A quick accounting-specific question and then a broader question for Chuck and Sanjay. Regarding the accounting-specific questions, regarding the Vigilant, I noticed in this quarter's financials that the company's now accrued for all of the cash portion on the Vigilant earnout. Is this based on already hitting the earnout milestones like you did on Washington Labs acquisition? Or,
yeah.
is it at this point simply estimating achievement?
We hit all the milestones.
Already? That's kind of early.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when does the measurement and accrual for the equity component of the earnout take place?
That's 2 years from the acquisition.
So 2 years from October of 17?
Is when that equity would vest.
Right.
Okay.
Measured on net contribution margin.
Okay.
Like, as we have mentioned repeatedly, when we did the acquisition, it was not only the product lines that we thought enhanced what we were doing, we also thought David Happy's talents fit very nicely into what we imagined as a new Mace.
Yes. And, from what I see so far, at least from what I can see from the public side, he certainly has had effectiveness and raised profile, which is great. Chuck and Sanjay, you know, representatives of Carlton McKenna attended the recent annual meeting that I was at. I was wondering if their involvement in your acquisition work is via a retainer cost arrangement or it's a best effort success fee, and more particularly, what are your focus, both your guys' focus, when looking at new acquisitions in terms of size, scope, and subsector market, if you have that focus yet?
So, Andrew, this is John, because I work directly with Carl McKenna a lot. Sanjay and Chuck obviously bring strategic advice and knowledge into the situation. Carl McKenna is on a tiny retainer, I'd call it, on a quarterly basis, and they do a lot of analysis. They look at everything for us to make sure that we look at it as forward-looking in an investor point of view. So they did help with the PowerPoint presentation that we put together and a couple other items. Second part of it is their retainer is a draw against any activity that we might have, which being an acquisition or anything else. So it works out to be very nicely on the success fee side of it. And the third part of it is that it's a narrow focus of what fits within what we want to do. Namely, if you look at us as being the number one pepper spray company in the world, are there other pepper spray companies we could acquire? Can we acquire them at the right price, at the right parameters, and the right math? And so I think they add a lot of value within that. But it is truly a narrow focus. It's not like we're looking for car washes or anything else. It is within that personal protection, personal safety, and personal security segment.
We don't like using them any more than anybody.
Right.
Great. Thank you.
Did I answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. I was trying to get Chuck and Sanjay's focus for the board.
Sanjay, they can comment too, but I...
sorry, can you say that again, Andrew?
I wanted to get you again. You're our new lead investors here. You're taking on over leadership over the board. I'm trying to get a feel for
yours and the board's focus when looking at new acquisitions in terms of size, scope, or markets, if it has a if there's been any shift, and to what avenue or focus is that shift?
So I'll speak for the board. There are acquisitions that have come our way. We've looked at them. In terms of our acquisition parameters, we're extremely focused on a return on investment and payback. It has to be something that is very good for our end customers. So, i.e., it's more likely a value buy that will have a quicker payback. So that sort of limits the size of the acquisitions that the board is willing to look at. The company is not in a position to do any big deals at the moment. You know, that can change. So the focus is very narrow. We want to grow organically, and we will only look at acquisitions if it is very, very good for the market and obviously the shareholders.
Right. Well, you don't have any acquisition currency right now, and with the your purchase of 20%, that would leave approximately 30% of our very low market cap available through equity, even if we were to use it, and that would certainly limit the size of an acquisition if we want to keep those NOLs. And with respect to that, while this year's expiring NOL is a small amount, the annual amounts that expire start kicking up. We sensitized you that there might be steps the company could take, other than generating immediate profits, of course, to use or to refresh these NOLs. Have you guys taken further steps and have identified or become informed as to what you guys could do to potentially refresh and keep some or all of that NOL value?
Yes. Yeah, so, Andrew, I thought we had some follow-up on that with you specifically and directly with regards to the steps that we're taking with regards to not accelerating anything that would enhance the tax deduction. And I believe the last time there I saw the communications, we were going to loop you in with our tax partner for further discussions on what you were referring to with regards to that term refresh. So I'll
right.
pick that up.
That was months ago, since the annual meeting. So I just wanted to know if, by now, you guys at least have identified what you need to do and, considered whether to do it.
Are familiar with the term refresh, and, we're implementing those strategies to not take or enhance tax deductions now to save those for down the road.
Yeah, you could also be generating gains now that would automatically reverse out and create losses later. The IRS doesn't have a problem with that. They like that.
Okay, so we have the tax accountants working on it.
Good. Well, that's the point I want to make is, or
sure.
find out is if this is if there's been follow-up and they say, oh, yeah, this is what you guys need to do, and you guys got to figure out if you want to do it or not. Okay, I have no other questions. Thank you.
Okay, so Ryan, is there any more questions in the queue? Otherwise, we'll thank everybody for participating.
We have one last question from Mr. Vijay Maralia of Regal Point Capital. Your line is open.
I'll keep it quick. I was actually going to ask about the NOLs. For 2019, what's the amount? Is it like $4.5 million?
$4.5 million.
Okay. All right, that gives us some motivation. Thanks, guys. Great quarter.
Thanks,
Thank
DJ. Okay, well, thanks again, everybody, for participating in the call. As I mentioned, that all the documents will be on the website within the next 10 days. We'll also have the transcript from the web from this call on the website. Thanks again, and we look forward to talking to you at the end of the third quarter.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.